You're listening to the Project Prospect Podcast. Lincoln, I am ready to talk draft. How about you?
I'm definitely ready to talk draft. I'm even more pumped up now that I got to hear an acoustic guitar version of the RBI baseball theme song.
Yeah, it's probably going to be the only podcast ever published with that intro music. So I think right now our audience should know that they have found the right podcast for them. If you haven't listened to our site before, we've had some pretty sweet traffic of late with all our draft coverage. I think we're gaining an audience. We've been podcasting for over a year now. We go to the AFL. We've gone to the Futures game. We are hardcore baseball fanatics. I think about as hardcore as you can get, Lincoln, without actually being employed within the industry.
That's probably true for all the good and bad that comes with that.
All right, so let's jump into it. We don't need to worry about our credentials. We can just show people how qualified we are by our draft discussion, even though Lincoln knows much more about these things than I do. I've seen Steven Strasburg pitch. I think we've both gone out and gotten to see him. You've seen a lot of these guys play on TV. I think you go out and see most of the local Texas guys, right?
That's right. Actually, this year, out of the 32 soon-to-be first-round picks, the only one, if he does go that high, that I haven't been able to see either in person or a lot of video of would be Raymond Fuentes, who's Carlos Beltran's nephew, I think, and that's because he plays in Puerto Rico, and it's hard for me to see a lot of Puerto Rico high school games.
I read about Raymond Fuentes for the first time today.
What were your impressions?
It pretty much seemed like, hey, Carlos Beltran's nephew is eligible for the draft. He could go high. That's what I got.
That's good. Cutting edge, in-depth analysis there.
That's what I've got. So I was thinking today, Lincoln. There are six guys in this draft class right now who I've been hearing about for months and months as very good bets to be high first round draft picks, who I feel very, very comfortable with. I think everyone has Steven Strasburg number one. Maybe we can talk about him and the hype that surrounds him in a bit. I think everyone agrees that Dustin Ackley is a likely number two. He has been playing first base due to a lingering elbow issue that, correct me if I'm wrong, Lincoln, he finally had Tommy John surgery prior to his junior year?
I'm not 100% sure on the timetable, but yeah, he has had Tommy John surgery and now appears to be fully healthy.
So if you look at Dustin Ackley and you see he's spent his entire college career at first base, how could he possibly be a center fielder or even a potential second baseman? I think the reasoning is he came in with kind of a lame arm as a freshman. He thought it would heal between his freshman and sophomore years. He came out as a sophomore, still was messed up. He finally had it operated on before his junior year, and now he's just gaining the arm strength that will allow him to play somewhere besides first base or DH. He's supposed to be a plus runner, the most advanced hitter in this draft class, and I think there's definitely a case to be made that even in last year's draft with a bunch of good college power hitters, Ackley would have been a likely top five overall pick, signability out of the question.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. If I'm sold on Ackley's ability to play center field, and he has the speed and athleticism to do so, I would take him over any of the high-profile college hitters who went early in last year's draft.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that one since I've seen Buster Posey a lot this year, and Posey's another guy who's thought to have a pretty good chance to stick as an up-the-middle defender, and I saw both Posey and Ackley play in college. I haven't seen Ackley play since his freshman year besides on TV. I've seen Posey pretty regularly since, and I prefer Ackley over Buster Posey at this point.
I would too. I haven't seen as much of Posey as you have, but it's close. But I think that Ackley's going to get on base more and might even have a little bit more power than Buster Posey, who does have the advantage in having a really cool name.
I feel like with Ackley, he established himself so quickly. He was a top recruit for UNC, but Alex White was thought to be a better recruit than Ackley at the time. They were both freshmen and getting rolling. And I felt like Posey was a good high school player. He was a solid freshman, a pretty good sophomore, and a really good junior. I feel like Ackley was a really good freshman, a really good sophomore, and an outstanding junior. Kind of like with Justin Smoke last year, maybe where his numbers weren't quite as impressive as Gordon Beckham and Posey's, depending on what you look at. But Smoke had the track record for me, and that I think that counts for something. I know you use two-year samples a lot in your college rankings.
Yeah, it absolutely counts for something. A full-length college season for a team that makes the playoffs is only going to be 59 or 60 games. So looking at two-year sample sizes and trends, you can see how a guy grows over the course of a couple years. You'll be able to learn a whole lot more than just looking at what a guy's done over the last 50 games.
And just to touch on real quickly for people who are still familiarizing themselves with our publication, we're big on numbers. We like looking for statistical trends. We think numbers are an excellent starting point for looking at players. And then scouting, I've kind of this year gotten more into and realized it is a necessary part of evaluating fall players for sure. And it's kind of the icing on the cake for me. I can tell a lot about a guy from his numbers, and I like to go and verify that with scouting. And people may ask why we don't use numbers more with high school players. And Lincoln, you just touched on with college guys, even if they go deep into the season, you're seeing about 50 games, which is a third as much as you're going to get with minor leaguers and big leaguers. For high school guys, they're playing sometimes, 20 to 30 games?
Yeah, and with high school too, the level of competition varies so much. The ballparks are always really weird. Yeah, the younger you go, I think the more heavily you have to rely on traditional scouting techniques. But with college hitters and college position players who have a long track record, you can project them with a great deal of accuracy just looking at their numbers.
And that's what we're trying to do here. And I think there are a few hitters in this class, some college hitters who we really like. They're guys whose numbers not only stick out at us, but also we've watched and scouted to an extent. For me, Rich Poythress isn't on the same tier as Dustin Ackley, but I have him as a guy who could be a potential top 15 overall pick. You've been big on Josh Begley since day one. I guess I wouldn't be shocked if he's not a first rounder, but I think he should be. And then another guy who we've been discussing of late is Mark Cross. Hopefully I'm saying that name right. Who I talked to one of my friends who follows college baseball very closely and described Cross as a bit of a fatty. I sought out pictures myself and thought he was more chunky, but it really doesn't matter because even though he plays in a park that, according to Boyd's World, favors hitters, he walks a ton, doesn't strike out a ton, and hits for a ton of power. Last year at this time, I kind of wish I would have been more aggressive with Alan Dykstra because his numbers really impressed me, Lincoln. And he was someone who I said, well, people aren't that high on him from a scouting point. Maybe he's going to follow the second round or supplemental round. And then he ended up being a first rounder. This year, Mark Cross is kind of in that boat with me, someone who has proven a lot in the college ranks and for whatever reason isn't getting the scouting love.
Yeah, however you want to say it, he's actually proven himself at a high level in college, too. He was one of the best hitters in the Cape Cod League last year. I mean, he's hit and hit incredibly well with a great amount of patience, a great amount of power at every single stop he's ever made in his college career, and there's no reason to think that trend won't continue once he makes the transition to professional ball.
So I think if you're looking for safe college bats, again, Dustin Ackley, Rich Poythress, Josh Begley, Mark Cross, all look like good bets to be big leaguers for me. Ackley might be the only one of that group who ends up being above average, but I think you have some solid to potentially above average guys in that group. And then there are some very risky college bats out there who people I think are going to be intrigued by, and Jared Mitchell, correct me if I'm wrong, is Tim Wheeler kind of another guy who's really broken out this year but didn't have the track record that some of these other guys do? Tim Wheeler, the center fielder with Sac State?
Yeah, Wheeler burst onto the scene a little bit last summer in the Cape when he got good reviews and looked like a potential breakout guy. But he's completely taken his game to a new level this spring. His power has seen a dramatic spike. He's become a more patient hitter, and he's maintained a good level of contact ability. All of those bode very well for his future success, and the fact that he's a good athlete who should be able to stick in center field mean that he's a very intriguing draft prospect right now. It's a little dicey sometimes with guys who go from okay prospects to great prospects. A lot of time there's some regression to the mean in their overall output. But in a draft that's kind of devoid of a lot of high-ceiling position player talent, Wheeler's one guy who stands out who has at least some track record of success to go on.
And I went to UC Davis. I got to see Sac State, who was only about 30 minutes from us, if that, in Davis. I got to see Sac State pretty regularly, and I thought about going up to see Wheeler, but decided that he wasn't exciting enough for me to really want to make the hour-and-a-half drive to Sacramento. And he has hit for a ton of power, and it sounds like he could play center field. It sounds like, for people who get excited about stolen bases in their fantasy league, he could be a sexy stolen base guy. And he's not a bad contact hitter. It's not one of these guys who hits for a lot of power and has a glaring hole in his swing. The only thing I see statistically with Wheeler that concerns me a little is his walk rate's probably a little below average for a college player. And, Link, in the studies that you've done, that shown that walk rate is the most important statistic for college hitters.
That's right. Of the kind of conventional statistics that we use, walk rate has the highest correlation with major league OPS than anything else you want to look at. And Wheeler's walk rate this year was about 11.5%, which is low for an elite prospect. And even worse was that as a sophomore, he walked just under 5% of the time. So if his actual patience, so to speak, is somewhere in between there and closer to 5%, then you're looking at a guy who might not have that high of an on-base percentage in the major leagues.
All right, so we've touched on almost our comfort zone, our favorite part of the draft, and the safe college hitters. Let's skip over to the upside. Lincoln, I think a lot of people are already talking about this draft strength appears to be in its pitching, particularly high school pitching. There's some high upside college pitchers as well, but maybe let's discuss Shelby Miller for a little bit, someone who I believe you've gotten to see out there in Texas.
That's right. I made the about 2.5-hour trek out to the raging metropolis of Brownwood, Texas, that has just a couple thousand people in it.
Oh, wow.
To see the latest flame-throwing Texas phenom. And I was not disappointed at all whenever I saw Miller. His fastball set 92, 95 miles an hour with life and some movement on it. He flashed a slider that left the poor little high school kids that he was facing just completely baffled. And it looks like he should be able to get plenty in swings of misses with it in the major leagues. He had pretty solid mechanics. He looks like he's a good athlete. He's, by all accounts, a good character kid and a very hard worker. And looks like a potential top 10 pick with the upside of having 2+ pitches or maybe better as a professional starter.
Now, in the research I've done of college pitchers, it seems pretty common for these guys not to really have to worry about a changeup yet. They don't need to throw it in high school, but it's something it sounds like they can develop later. And same thing with their command. It's nice to have a guy like Tim Alderson, who already has masterful commands, entering pro ball. But with Miller, it sounds like he has plenty of room to add polish, opposed to maybe someone like Tyler Matzik. But how much progress do you expect for high school pitchers in terms of their changeup and command?
Well, that's where you really get into the gray area with prospects, and it's cost several GMs and scouting directors their jobs over the years, praying that a guy that's all potential will eventually fulfill that potential. If I knew for certain how well each high school pitcher was going to develop and shore up the deficiencies in their games, I'd probably be making a lot of money sitting in a war room right now.
So if you were on the clock at pick number 5 and Tyler Matzek, Shelby Miller, and Zach Wheeler were available, who would you take right now?
I would take the Capistrano Valley High School lefty, Tyler Matzek, and then do a little touchdown dance.
So you think he belongs higher in the draft than that?
He is currently number 3 on my draft board. And I like Tyler Matzek for the length of his career better than any other pitcher in this draft.
Better than Strasburg.
Better than Strasburg over the entire length of his career.
Is there anyone then that you could compare Matzek to even loosely as a high school arm?
It's hard. I honestly haven't been this excited, this bullish about a high school pitcher. Normally I'm very conservative when it comes to high school pitchers. I haven't been this excited about a prep hurler since I've started following the draft. I like him more than I liked Rick Porcello going into the 2006 draft or 7.
Wow. Porcello was thought to be one of the best prep pitchers perhaps since Josh Beckett.
Mm-hmm.
Very high praise. And then there are a few college arms who I don't know if everyone's seeing eye to eye with this already, and I kind of like it, Lincoln. I think we've developed some pretty strong opinions from following a lot of these guys for essentially a year that differ in the industry, and I think we have the logic to back them up. Tanner Sheppers is number 3 in my draft rankings right now. Where do you have him?
I have him number 4, just behind Strasburg, Ackley, and Matzek.
When I see Sheppers, he struck out a ton of hitters in college last year. His strikeout rate mm-hmm. from last year is better than just about, and other than Strasburg, I have him at a 35.6 strikeout rate, but his walk rate really wasn't that great last year, 11.1%.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe he entered Fresno State was it a shortstop?
I do believe that he converted from being a position player early on in his college career.
And then the talk I've heard is that he's throwing harder now than he was last year. Maybe you can elaborate on some of what you've heard about his shoulder injury from last year, Lincoln.
Yeah, I've had the chance to talk to people in multiple different organizations who have access to the team's medical reports. They both told me that the shoulder injury that Sheppers suffered last May that depressed his draft stock and ultimately made the Pirates not be able to sign him was only a muscular injury. He didn't break a bone. There was no structural injury. And there's a big difference there. Muscular injuries, if he's healthy, you'll see it immediately in a return to velocity. And he's been throwing 96, 97, occasionally 98 miles an hour with the St. Paul Saints of the American Association this spring.
Yeah, really, when I think of Sheppers, I almost want to liken him a little bit to Jabba Chamberlain in that he has a very good fastball. If Sheppers would have signed last year, I think he could have made a Chamberlain-like ascent. That he has swing and miss stuff, he definitely has some question marks, but I don't see any major glitches with his mechanics. Maybe that's something you've studied more than I have, and I don't believe his injury from last year is as serious as a lot of people are making out to be. I think he could be someone whose stock soars come this time next year as a prospect.
I absolutely agree with you. And there are certainly is a lot of risk associated with Sheffers. A shoulder injury is not a good thing. We happen to think that it was a little bit overblown, and that his stock is probably a little lower than where it should be, especially given how productive he's been, how good his stuff is, how high his ceiling is. I mean, we're talking about a guy that could be a number one or number two starter in the major leagues within a couple of years.
There's another college pitcher who I think fits that mold too, and there are guys who I'm really becoming high on, like Chad Jenkins. I'm also a fan of, I think Alex Wilson is someone who can impress people, James Paxton, but another college pitcher who's upside excites me, and I think he's another one who might get knocked on a bit by, I don't know if it's so much the scouting community, but especially the media that thinks they're scouts community. Mike Leake is under 6 feet, and a lot of media members think that that's going to drastically affect his ability to become an effective big league starter. But when I look at this guy, yeah, he doesn't have a mid-90s fastball, but a lot of big league pitchers have low 90s fastballs. His changeup is supposed to be average. His changeup's supposed to be plus, curveball average, plus command. He's dominated the college ranks this year. 30% strikeout rate, 4.3% walk rate. I've been talking to some of my other colleagues who follow the draft, and they're like, nah, not a top 10 overall pick, not a top 15 overall pick. And I think he's someone who we're going to see go top 10 overall now tomorrow.
It's very possible. You can make the argument that Mike Leake has been the best pitcher in college baseball this year, including Strasburg. The conference that he pitches in, the park that he pitches in, the overall schedule that he's had to face are much more difficult than what Strasburg's had to deal with. But Leake is with him in every category, really, except strikeouts, and he's, I think, second in the nation in strikeouts.
Yeah, people may not know that the thin air in Arizona allows the ball to fly. When you look at Arizona Fall League stats, some people kind of think of the hitting numbers as a joke because everything gets inflated, and that was kind of the talk a little bit with Brett Wallace last year. How much is his ballpark helping him? Is he really the power hitter that a lot of people think he is? And then I used to think if I was a high school pitching prospect and Arizona State or University of Arizona were big on me, I'd be like, I think I'm going to go pitch it at Long Beach. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But Mike Leake was like, no, I'll go to Arizona. And he's hanging. He's doing just fine.
That was a very good Mike Leake impersonation, too.
Exactly what well, I like. Have read his blog, so I hope that I didn't completely misrepresent you there, but it's probably an awful Mike Leake impression.
But just to be clear, we both really like Leake as a prospect. I think he's as good a bet to be at least a number three or four starter than anyone else in this draft. He's got four pitches he can throw for strikes at any point to count. He doesn't have plus velocity, but his command and his movement are so good that it more than makes up for it.
And I think there are probably quite a few people listening to this podcast now who got into prospects because of their fantasy leagues, who got into the draft because of their fantasy leagues. And a lot of fantasy leagues don't have that many teams, so you go for the high upside guy. You want the who's going to be the next superstar. Well, if you get into deeper fantasy leagues, and which are probably a little resemble better the actual baseball decision making, a number three and number four starter is very valuable, especially someone who stays healthy. A league average position player is very valuable. I don't think there's a problem at all with taking someone with a top 10 pick who you think is just a good bet, a very good bet to be an average big leaguer. And that may be all Mike Leake is. If he doesn't have an above average fastball, the chances of him being a number one, number two starter aren't as high as maybe someone like Shelby Miller, someone like James Paxton, or even Rex Brothers could be another guy who really emerges. But I think someone who's a good bet to be a number three starter has a lot of value.
Absolutely. And especially if you're looking at it from a club's perspective, if you can get a guy who can give you number three starter production when he's before he reaches his arbitration dates, that's incredibly valuable from a cost-effectiveness standpoint, which is why a guy like Leake who should be able to move very, very fast. You're going to see him put up just unbelievable numbers in the minors, and being a big league uniform really soon is even more valuable.
So let's touch briefly, Lincoln, before we wrap this up, on just some of the high school hitters. I think there's a lot of uncertainty with high school hitters because you don't get to go, they don't light up radar guns. I mean, maybe some of them are pitchers too, and you know they have a plus arm like Mike Moustakas, but it's pretty hard to determine, especially with the best hitters getting pitched around a ton. I remember that happened to Michael Burgess, and his stock just crashed. These guys play 20-game seasons. They get pitched around. We know very little about them, and I don't think there's a high school hitter in this year's class who I would take as a top 5 overall pick. I don't even know if I'd take any of these high school hitters as a top 10 overall pick. I'm sure one will go in that range, but I wouldn't be the one taking them.
I'm probably in that same boat with you. And it's not a lot that one of the guys goes in the top 10. But it's hard to look at a guy, even if he's a good athlete, if he's strong, if he's got good bat speed, if he's got a nice swing plane, it's hard to look at a guy who may be crushing 80-mile-an-hour fastballs and try and project how he'll do whenever he's facing guys throwing 92, 93, 94 with movement and then a big hammer curve. That's a really big adjustment to make, and it's really hard to project with any degree of certainty.
Like, I think of Robert Stock, who's someone who was thought to be almost a surefire first-rounder in 2007. He skipped out on his senior year in high school, went to USC instead, was their starting catcher, thought to be this hitting phenom who's also a semi-genius. I don't think Demi Genius is a... All right, I'm going to take a mulligan there. Who's thought to be a brainchild. And then Stock is completely dropped as a hitting prospect. He, I think, has played in the Cape Cod League twice already. He's been a good contact hitter, but he hasn't walked a ton and he hasn't hit for power. Now people are talking about him as anywhere between, what, the second and the 40th round as a pitcher?
That's a pretty big gap there, but yeah, he's made a lot of the scouts who loved him as a high school hitter look like semi-geniuses.
this is true, or demi-genius, whatever route we want to take. Last year, Brett Lawrie was someone who kept rising, and I'm like, all right, he's from Canada. How many people have really seen him? What do we know about this guy that tells us he's a top half of the first round kind of guy? And I was fortunate enough to get to see Lawrie take some batting practice and move around a bit in strength training. And when he made contact with the ball, it blew me away. He had so much power. I said, okay, I see it now. And like, I kind of want to think, okay, maybe Bobby Bortran can be that kind of guy. Maybe Matt Davidson has the solid all-around approach. Maybe Michael Trout's going to keep rising. I'm not that excited, honestly, about Donovan Tate. I think he has a very low floor. Anytime a guy has one of his biggest questions is his hit tool, and we're talking about him being one of the top 10 hitters in the country, I don't think everything adds up right there. He's another guy who maybe you want in your fantasy draft, but I'm not drooling over taking him in the top half of this draft right now.
Yeah, I'm the same way with you. And there really doesn't appear to be a Hosmer or a Delmon Young or an Upton in this draft who's just a man amongst boys on the college level. All of the prospects, even the very best ones, come with warts and a good deal of uncertainty. I think that there's good value in the high school ranks, and that you might see guys who get drafted in the second, third, fourth rounds develop into just as good of players as guys who go in the 20s.
That's exactly what I was about to touch on. If I'm taking a high school hitter in the first round right now, I'm a little uncertain. But some of these guys in the second or third rounds, that could be fun. That could earn you a promotion. So let's touch, Lincoln, on Steven Strasburg. I think he's already a deity. I think that he's going to have a statue at whatever team's ballpark drafts him the day he makes his big league debut, which is going to be right after he signs, be it on August 15th or right after the draft. We've seen him. You've seen him multiple times. Is he immortal?
He's definitely mortal. He may be like Hercules, who's kind of half mortal, half god. But the hype machine has worked a little bit of overtime with Strasburg. And the sad thing is that he really doesn't need a lot of hype. I mean, he's so good on his own that I think some people may be building up unrealistic expectations and might be a little bit disappointed whenever they actually get to see him.
I have a secret. I'm going to come clean on this one. I was on Steven Strasburg Wikipedia page one night and saw the lead sentence talked about his 103-mile-an-hour fastball. And I was so peeved about it, I edited it. I wasn't going to tolerate that anymore. Because you and I both know that every time Steven Strasburg has thrown a 103-mile-an-hour fastball this year, it's actually been someone's radar gun malfunctioning. Or not malfunctioning, it did what it was supposed to, but it read the ball off the bat. It didn't read it coming out of Strasburg's hand. It read it once someone made dinky little contact off of him, which still happened to be 103 miles an hour. He doesn't throw that hard. And if he does, it's coming out of the bullpen under perfect conditions. I'm pretty sure if you had Steven Strasburg come out and throw 50 pitches for you right now, none of them would break 100. None of them.
Yeah, he might touch 100, but... the only way he's going to throw 103 is if he's got, like, a 50-mile-an-hour wind at his back.
I saw Jared Parker throw a couple weekends before I saw Strasburg throw this year. They have the same velocity on their fastball, and people didn't talk about Parker this way. I mean, Parker is someone who I think, barring injury, if he can learn to harness his fastball. Now, Strasburg does have better command of his fastball, which is why I already see it as a plus pitch, while Parker doesn't have command of it yet, so it's more an average offering, even though it's high 90s. But we're not talking about someone who's just going to blow hitters away. He has an above-average breaking ball. He has the above-average fastball. No one really knows with this changeup. I mean, he's probably thrown his changeup 40 times this year.
That might be a little bit on the high side. I think I saw him throw it once in the... three times that I've seen him pitch in person. I do think you might be underselling his fastball a little bit. It's more than above average. I mean, it's a plus pitch. It probably plus because he locates it so well. It's just not 102, 103 miles an hour.
Okay. I'll give you. It is the best fastball I've seen all year. I've seen a lot of pitchers throw, but it's not the best fastball I've seen in my life.
Right. Who has the best fastball that you've seen in your life, by the way?
That's what I was just thinking, that I should probably know that answer to that question before I make that statement. But
yeah, you open that door, you've got to be ready to walk through it.
No, I mean, I think Randy Johnson's pretty impressive, and I like the guys who can get a lot of ground balls with their fastball, too. So, I get to see Tim Lincecum pitch on a pretty regular basis, and his fastball is pretty impressive. I think Jason Schmidt, when he was on before he started having shoulder problems, granted I'm naming all guys who have donned the Giants black and orange recently, but those are the ones I see a lot.
Juan Barrichello.
Christy Mathewson, you know.
Ooh, old school.
So that's my Strasburg rant. I had to get that out of my system. Are there any other guys, Lincoln, who you see as very exciting or just someone who you might differ from the norm on as potential top 15 overall picks?
He won't go this high, but a player that I've written about and I know you're a big fan of his and who we both think is very underrated in this draft process is Arizona State center fielder Jason Kipnis.
I am with you on that one. He's a guy who walks a ton, doesn't strike out a lot. Power is solid, given he's playing at ASU, but I would take him. I think another center fielder who gets talked about a lot as a potential first-rounder is A.J. Pollock. Pollock might have a bit more defensive value over Kipnis right now, but Pollock has, to me, a below-average plate approach for a college hitter. That's not something I'd be too excited about. Kipnis has more power. Pollock's probably a slightly better contact hitter. But I'm with you. I think Kipnis belongs in the first round, and I don't think I've seen him in that range in a single mock draft yet.
No, he hasn't been in that range. He says that that his on-base ability should be appealing to teams who value that sort of thing. Are there actually teams that don't value that sort of thing? I mean, everyone should be on this guy.
Not something
he's going to get on base. And
Kipnis said about teams might not value his on-base ability.
Well, it kind of left the door open. Let me, of course, now that I tried to quote it, I'm going to have to pull it up.
No, I trust you. And I think that's something that a lot of people have trouble accepting with baseball, that my goal as a hitter, granted I wasn't a great one, but I think the goal to hitting should be to not make outs. And I think a lot of people want to see the 500-foot home runs. That's why we watch the game. We watch it because it's exciting, but winning is exciting too, and not making outs is winning. On-base percentage correlates much more with winning percentage than slugging does, and much, much, much more than batting average. Yet 99 out of 100 journalists are going to give you guys batting average when on-base percentage is so much more important. It's almost laughable how they don't understand that. There was my smug rant.
Yeah, and been going to the Keith Law School of Snark. Let me read the actual quote here. And it's a good report, and Mayo does great work. I'm not trying to bash him or anything here. But he says, still, he's tightened up his swing, and his on-base ability should appeal to those teams who really value those skills. The intimation is that there are some teams that don't value those skills. Now, maybe people in Seattle or Kansas City are saying, my team doesn't value on-base percentage. But it's kind of shocking that a hitter who's been this productive, who profiles this well as a major leaguer, would go so unreported as to how great he's been.
Yeah, and I wonder too how much of it is really the organizations themselves not getting this, or I bet a lot of it is just the media being really slow to catch on in large. And then people read this information and it spreads all over the internet. And I don't know. I mean, I have sat with some scouts that have some pretty questionable analytical skills, but I've also sat with some guys who are very, very sharp, much, much smarter than I am. So I trust that every big league office has a lot of people making good decisions. And even the people who scouts I hear comparing Jason Hayward's RBIs to Travis Snyder's at the same point of the season. And that does actually happen. There are people like this in the game. I'm serious. Even those guys are probably 1,000 times better at scouting than I am right now. It's just kind of funny. The people who complain about statistics are usually the people who have no business discussing statistics.
Right. And you need a combination of everything. I mean, statistics gives you part of the picture, and scouting gives you part of the picture, but you need everything to get the whole picture. But I think people are ignoring a very important part of the picture, i.e. how well he doesn't make outs, and are undervaluing him. But at the same time, it's not like he's going to go undrafted. He's never going to have a chance to play pro ball. He's probably going to get drafted in the second or third round and likely end up being a steal for someone.
And Dustin Pedroia was a second rounder, and I think people who don't really understand the whole big picture well will be like, yeah, he wasn't even someone who was coveted as an amateur. He came out of nowhere. Second round is still one of the top 100 amateurs in the nation, which is pretty good. So you're right, Lincoln. These guys, even if they're not a first rounder, they can go second rounder and become a superstar. And we'll probably have some I told you so's, and we'll probably have some moments where we were just well off. I mean, maybe Josh Begley is the next Jeremy Brown, or maybe that will be Mr. Mark Cross. I don't know. I'm ready to be blatantly wrong, and I'm ready to learn from it, but I'm probably ready to conclude this show and stop ranting before people start thinking I'm smug and snarky. But he's Lincoln. I'm Adam. We are going to be covering the draft all day on draft day, just about. We'll probably start our coverage. I'll set you up with the chat, and you can do whatever you want, Lincoln, but We will be live chatting throughout the draft, watching it, discussing it. I'm pretty excited, and I'm sure you are too, right, Lincoln?
Yeah, I'm very excited. The last draft chat that we had was impromptu, and we got really good feedback on it. I'm hoping for this one to be even bigger, for there to be even more people involved in our site. And yeah, I mean, if you're parked in front of the TV, grab your computer and get instant feedback on what's going on and get a slightly different perspective than what you're going to hear from whoever is on the TV broadcast, who probably haven't seen these guys play, who haven't done the homework that we have, and who are just going by what other people tell them.
Yes, I believe it's going to be some well-known faces for that MLB Network. I'm really not looking forward to how bitter I'm going to get and how snarky and smug I'll be as I watch it, but it'll be a lot of excitement too.
Yeah. Yeah, anyone who doesn't want to listen to Steve Phillips for 3 hours, come to our site and we'll give you actual information.
I'm for it, Lincoln. All right, well, we appreciate everyone listening. Can I take you away here with some Sandlot music? And come listen to us again soon.